Go to the next one, verse number 28, page 44, which talks a little bit more about the wise person. Verse 28, page 44. Priyo hi jnanino devasa. Priyo hi jnanino devasa. Sacha devasya vai priyaha. Sacha devasya vai priyaha. Atmarupam harim yadvat. Marupam harit yadvat. Pashyetva jagadadyataha. Pashyetatva jagadadyataha. So he says, priyo hi jnanino. For the wise person, God is the most dear. And for God also, the wise person is the most dear to him. So he loves God the most and God loves the wise person the most. You say, what? You mean he plays favorites? No, he loves all four. But the one who loves God unconditionally, just as in the world, somebody loves you unconditionally and another one says, I love you because you have money. Whom would you love more? Who would you say is a true devotee? The one who loves me for what I am, not for what I bring. So similarly, God says, all are dear to me, but this one is a little more dear. I love him because he loves me 100%, so I love him 100% because he's not using me to get something else. He does not love me. Because a person who loves God for getting something, when suppose the person doesn't get, then what happens? He said, what kind of God is this? You know, I asked him for this hit. I didn't even get it. So the person's faith very easily gets shaken when he or she doesn't get what they want. So he says, Atma Rupam Harim. He is the self of me. God is the self of him. And not only that, but God is the self of all. What happens is that when a person loves God unconditionally and surrenders himself or herself totally to God, then he or she realizes that God alone is this whole universe and everything that is created is him. And we all came from that one God. So when we came from him, then we are all divine. So God and I are not separate. So he does not find any difference between himself and God. Or she does not say God is somebody sitting up in heaven or in the church, but God is in my heart. And God and I are one. As even Jesus said, he who hath seen me hath seen the Father. So when a person becomes one with God, sees God in everything, loves God, and only wants to be with God, then what happens is they become one. And God and he are not separate. Because he does not think God is somebody sitting in the church or up in heaven, but God is in my heart and constantly remembers God, constantly loves God and becomes one. Just as when you constantly remember and love somebody, then you become one with that person. Say, I love a boy or I love a girl and I constantly think about her, then ultimately we become one, and especially if you get married and all, or you become close, then you say, okay, you and I are one. We are not separate. Even though we may be two bodies, but our hearts are one, our minds are one. So similarly, he says, God and I are one. Not only that, but then he sees God in everybody. He says, just as I have been created by God, my loving Father, my Almighty Father, my loving God, that same God has created her and her and him and her. Everything is that one God alone. Just as I am divine, everybody is divine. And so such a person loves all beings. Doesn't matter whether he's a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Jew. Doesn't matter whether he's black or white or Hispanic. Doesn't matter what race, what color, what faith, what church he goes to, what building he worships in, what book he reads, what language he speaks, what clothes he wears. He sees the one divine Father in everybody. And that's what we find in the lives of these great prophets, whether it was Jesus or whether it was Buddha or whether it was Mahatma Gandhi. All of them saw that one God in everybody, whether it's the low caste or a high caste, whether it's a rich or a poor. And that is the hallmark of a devotee. You cannot say that I love God, but then I hate you. Why? Because if you hate somebody, then you're hating God, because God is there in every one of us. So the moment I say I dislike you or I hate you or I don't like you, then you cannot say then I am a true devotee of God. Even, in fact, what this person says, that it is my God who is in everybody, but he is very mischievous. And he is hiding. In some places, he plays the role of a kind person. Some places, he plays the role of an angry person. Some places, of a compassionate. Some places, of a killer. Some places, of a murderer. Some places, of a robber. And some places, of a saint. So it is my one God who is hiding in all of these. He's there in the murderer. He's there in the robber. He's there in the saint. He's there in the church, in the priest. He's there in everybody. So that one God, the wise person, sees everywhere. And that is why Hindus, we worship rivers, mountains, even snakes. And people say, you know, what kind of people are you? How can you worship a mountain? How can you worship a river? How can you worship snake? It's not that we worship the river or the mountain or the snake or the cow, but we see that there is a one God who at this moment is manifesting. Just as when the river is there, she's feeding us. It is the God himself who is come in the form of the river, the mountain, the sun. We worship the sun and the moon. Even the, you know, the American Indians, they used to worship nature. They worship the sun, the moon, you know, the thunder, the eagle. Why? Because these are all God's powers. These are all God's creations. And in fact, the main problem with the world today is that we have forgotten to worship nature. And that is why the whole earth we are polluting. If you think about it, you know, we have polluted the air with all the pollutants. We have polluted our rivers, our oceans, the ground, you know, even where we grow, you know, the crops, there is, we put so much fertilizer and so many chemicals. And that's why they talk about organic, you know, that it should be grown organic. Why? Because we find that produce that is not grown organically, we are not sure, but there is so much pollution in the atmosphere. There is so much radioactive waste we are releasing. The air, the water, you cannot find clean water, you cannot find clean air to breathe. And that's why the environmental movement has become very powerful. Environmentalists are saying, you know, you need to protect the earth. You know, we are talking about global warming. People say there is no global warming. But the fact is that we have raised the temperature of the air so much that eventually in about 50 or 60 years, it's going to become so bad that, you know, it's going to melt the snow caps, and there's going to be flooding, and there's going to be so many, you know, atmospheric problems. So we have to see God in the earth, and we have to worship Mother Earth, protect her, and take care of her. This is the only home we have. It's like in your own house. Suppose you start throwing dirt and start throwing filth and polluting. You don't want it. You put humidifiers, you put air purifiers, you clean the floor. But my house I keep clean, but the earth I pollute, the earth is my home too. Mother Earth is the only home I have. We cannot go and live on Moon or Earth or Mars or Venus because the atmosphere is not going to support us. So we have to protect the earth as a mother, as a manifestation of God. So that's why earth should be worshipped. It should not be polluted. And it is said that these wise people, it is for them that the whole world goes on. It is said in our scriptures that the sun shines not for you and me, but for this wise person who loves God. The rain falls not for you and me, but falls for this wise person who loves God. Then people ask, is there anything wrong in asking God, you know, for relief of suffering or for, so if I want a job or something? Is it wrong to pray? We said, no, it's not wrong to pray. At least you are remembering God. But the problem comes when, A, if you only go to God when you want something, otherwise you don't go. You never don't have time for him. Only when I have a problem, I go. That becomes a problem. Or you go to God with a long list. You know, I want 10 things. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And you read out, God, I want this, this. And suppose God, out of 10, he gives you 9. And you say, God, what happened about the 10th one? How come I didn't get it? God says, at least I gave you 9. That's okay. 9 I got. That's my own effort. But what about, then, you know, then we only go to God for him. Or we keep on asking, you know, I want this, I want that. Every Sunday we go with a new list, you know, with a new demand. The worst than that is people who are ungrateful. You know, especially in this country, we have so much. You know, we have our health, and then we have comfort. At least we have a home. We have water to drink. We have relatively clean air. We have a car. We have a house. And if you go to so many countries, people don't even know where the next meal is coming from. You know, and they're living in a hut. That is, if they're lucky, some of them are just sleeping on the street outside and using bathrooms, which are, you know, they just go out into the woods or just somewhere out. They don't even have running water. They don't have bathrooms. At least we have all those things and we take them for granted. You know, we say, it's okay. I'm supposed to get it. You're not supposed to get anything. Everything that you have is God's gift. And so every morning, wake up and thank Him. God, thank you, God, for another day. Thank you for all you have given me. You have given me this human body. I could have been born as a cockroach or a mosquito or a rat. At least I have a human birth. I have human intelligence. So I should not be proud of my intelligence. I should not be proud of my abilities. I should be grateful. God, if I can draw well, thank you. It is because of you. If I can speak well, it is because of you. If I can walk and talk, it is because of you. If I win in a race, or if I win in a championship or a basketball game, or I should not say, I'm so great, I did such a wonderful job. Thank you, God, for giving me the ability. So constantly remember God, and last of all, be grateful to Him and love Him selflessly. Not selfish love, but unselfish love. I love Him regardless, and then share whatever you have with others. If you can share what you have, if you can help others, if you can love others, then only you are a wise person, then only you truly love God. So that is, in brief, the qualities of a wise person and the different kinds of devotees who approach God. And the idea of studying this, as I said again and again, is to bring myself to this. I should be like that. And I should love God totally, unconditionally, unselfishly, and love the whole world as God Himself. So that is the idea. Yes?
Isn't it difficult to understand that God is the healer?
The fact that somebody can lift a knife and poke it in your stomach, God has given him the strength, right? Otherwise, he would be dead. If God was not in him, he would be dead. The fact that he can lift a knife and poke it in your stomach and kill you, God has given him the ability. In fact, God is there in everybody, in every animal, in every plant, in every bird, in every fish, in every human. The problem is that we misuse God's power. You can use it to heal. You can use it to heal somebody. Like somebody, you know, pokes a knife. Now the same person, when he goes to the hospital and a surgeon operates and fixes the wound, it is God working in that surgeon too, as much as he was working in the killer. Is the question, is the power that has been given to him, how does he use it? Does he use it to heal the world, or does he use it to kill? But God, it's like electricity, you know, electricity, or like nuclear energy, you know, like nuclear energy. Now, nuclear energy can be used to make a bomb, which they did in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. They killed millions of people. But that same nuclear energy, when it is placed in a radiation machine, it can kill cancer. It can destroy cancer. So that same nuclear power can be used to kill million people, or can be used to heal. And in fact, in cancer, the cancer doctors, they use nuclear, like radioactive iodine, they use radioactive materials to destroy cancer if it's used in the... So the nuclear energy is there in the atom bomb as well as it is there in that radioactive medicine. You understand? But it's how we use the power. Do we use it to kill a million people, or do we use it to heal a million people? So you cannot blame nuclear energy that it was because of nuclear energy that the people died. No. Nuclear energy is neutral. How do you use the energy? Do you use it to kill, or do you use it to heal? So similarly, God is neutral. He loves, He gives power to all. It is up to me how I use my power. And then based on that, I get the results of my karmas. If I use it to kill somebody, I will suffer the consequences. I'll be arrested, go to jail, be hanged or life imprisonment. Or even if I escape and don't get arrested, I will have to pay the consequences, of the karmas. You can't escape that. Nobody can escape the consequences of their actions. And a person who uses God's power to help others, then he will be called a saint, or he will be called a healer, or be respected in the world. God is there equal. He's there in the murderer too. He's there in the robber. He's there in the... A person who robs a bank, he needs to think so much, right? He spends so many hours planning how he'll go at night and bypass the alarms, and then how he will, rob the bank in the middle of the night. He needs a lot of intelligence. So who gave him that intelligence? God did. He didn't create it himself. He was given the intelligence by God, but he's misusing it to rob the bank instead of helping others. But that's a very good point. Yeah, people always ask that. How can we see God in the murderer? Jesus didn't say love only the good people. He said love thy neighbor, whoever that neighbor is. He could be a murderer. He could be a killer. He loved, he didn't even hate the two thieves who were next to him. He said, even he forgave the ones who were, crucifying him, because he loved everybody. That's how the hallmark of a saint is. They love everyone. That's a very good question. Thank you. Okay, so if suppose you don't forgive, somebody hurt you 5 years ago, right, or 10 years ago, and the person is gone. He hurt you and he's somewhere else. He's in the village. Now he has forgotten, but by you repeating the hurt, who is being hurt? I am. So then, what is the benefit of holding on to that hatred? You say, he hurt me, that's fine, I forgive him. Once you forgive him or her, then that person no longer can torture you. But if you hold on, that person 10 years ago, he said that, I'm never going to forget, I'm never going to forgive. Then you are just reliving that hurt. 10 years ago or 5 years ago, somebody hurt you. It hurt you at that time, but the person is gone. 1 month, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. You keep on repeating that again and again. He hurt me, he hurt me. So he's repeatedly hurting you. If you say, okay, he hurt me, that's fine, I forgive him, I have no hatred or malice towards him, then what happens is you are free of that sorrow. You become free. But that does not mean that you become a doormat, that every time the person comes and you say, okay, you can hurt me. No. If you can resist, you resist. But suppose that person hurt you and is gone. If you hold on to that hurt and don't forgive, what is the benefit of that? How are you benefiting from that?
And the person did exactly
the same thing. So then next time, then you have to be more careful. Then don't associate with him. But then don't have any malice or hatred towards him. And suppose, if you can't avoid that person, then you be watchful. And then you say, okay, if he hurts me, you expect it. See, if you expect that he will hurt you, then it won't bother you as much. Like if you expect it's going to rain, then you will take an umbrella, right? If you didn't expect it was going to rain, you go out and you get wet. So you say, okay, this person, that is how he is. And if I can't avoid him, that's his nature. So I am on my guard and I'm fine. He can keep on saying, but once you have forgiven him, then you have developed a shield in your heart where this person cannot hurt you again. You have to become strong. And especially if you know that that's how this person is, then you say he can't help himself. A, he's that kind. Secondly, there is a Lord up above who will give him the results of his karmas. Whatever actions he is performing, he will be punished for that. I don't have to have any resentment in my heart, because if you resent or have anger, then all you're doing is just prolonging your own suffering. Instead, you say, I forgive him, I'm through with it, I'm done. Then you clean your heart, and then you have no malice, no anger, no hatred.
Yeah, you should ask forgiveness.
Yeah, you can say that. I have nothing to do with you again. Yeah, you don't have to again and again subject yourself. But inside, you should not have dwell upon the past, because then you're just carrying the sorrows with you. Right. Just forgive him and forget it. Forgive and forget. Any other comments?
I don't know. It's kind of a broad question, but just, what can we do next?
I think what I cannot affect the whole earth, but I can do my part. Maybe I can drive a hybrid. I can drive a smaller car. I can, you know, use less water, be efficient in my water, don't waste water. Be careful about the water. Maybe I should not release too much pollutants, you know, like, you know, lighting a fireplace or, you know, again, you know, using too much energy, you know, in a house, just letting the heat run or air conditioning. So whatever I can do, whatever limited way, I can do my best. And if each person decides that's what they're going to do, and I can share, spread this knowledge. If I can belong to an association which is working for the environment, you know, like the Greenpeace or the, you know, whatever the, you know, the, so that's how I can help myself and I can help others and do my part. And ultimately he has to take care of his world. It is his world. You leave it to him and say, okay, you know, I did my part, God, at least I am at peace. Not stress over. You can't affect what is happening in China or what is happening in India or what is happening in the coal plants, you know, in eastern United States, you know, whether they're using so much coal and all. I can't help it, but at least I can do my part to make my home clean, my environment clean. I just do my best. Maybe I walk or I bike to work instead of using. So whatever little I can do, you know, to contribute. Thank you.